This is Emotional Connection with Raphael Kushner. It's my personal and professional passion to help people access their emotions directly. This simple but rare process, for those who master it, creates greater wisdom, success, and most of all, well-being. Each week on this podcast, I share a recent session recorded with a client facing a particular challenge. This gives you, the listener, a chance to see the process of emotional connection in an up-close, unedited fashion, applied to practical, everyday concerns. Whenever you get the gist of the issue at hand and want to dive into the process itself, feel free to skip ahead in the podcast. For more information on this work, please visit my website, livingthequestions.org. This is also where you can reach me to ask questions and provide feedback, schedule your own private session by phone, get listings of upcoming events in your area, and learn about our unique year-long program. Once again, that's livingthequestions.org. Thank you so much for joining us, and now, enjoy the podcast. We're here with Francesca. Welcome. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for doing this.
You're more than welcome. I want to start off by saying that I have known you for a long time, and I'm aware of a lot of the deep work that you've brought to your own healing and transformation. I know that you have a lot of wisdom, insight, and tools that you're using to serve you on your continual quest for deeper presence and joy and service. So, this is one of those sessions where I'm starting out by, bowing to you and realizing that probably as fellow travelers, we will touch on some things that hopefully could add to your toolbox and also, help people refine their own process, whether they're just getting started or they consider themselves on the path for a while. So rather than, let's say, the basics, maybe some refinements. How does that sound?
It sounds great, and I think that part of what happens when you get to make acquaintances and have partnerships of any sort with people who are also on that path is that we remind each other, and there might even be salient moments where I was in the zone, so to speak, that you can remember and remind me of that for whatever reason I'm not remembering. And so, yeah, I think I love the idea of that. And then, of course, I'm also open to new tools and technologies whenever they can help.
Right. Well, also, you hit on a key word that if anybody's been listening to more than one of these, it comes up consistently, and that's the word remembering, because I think that when we apply these tools and we become more present, what we learn is really something that it almost always feels like somewhere deep inside we've always known. And so the greatest learning really is a remembering of our essence or our fullness. And so it's in that spirit, that we should begin. So why don't you start out, if you could, just by kind of rambling for a few moments about the issue that you want to take a look at today, and then I'll ask you some questions, and then together I just trust that we'll land exactly where we need to.
That sounds great. I'm feeling a little bit stuck, and in terms of manifesting sort of the next level of my professional growth, and some of it is that I am in a transition, so I am creating a slightly new career path for myself, but the majority of the calls I get to earn, which I have a willingness and, of course, a need to do, are sort of the old life, what people know me as being good at, and that is monetized, and I feel a conflict between saying yes to that work and then managing my time around that work as I feel my passion for that work waning, and then trying to at the same time cultivate skills and funds to do a new body of work that I want to do. And I've gotten an incredible response, when I've sort of shared that idea, floated those ideas with people, but I find myself in a bit of what feels like a bit of a time management conundrum. And so what feels like it's happening is that the work I'm begrudgingly doing stuff that feels burdensome but is bringing in the bucks. And I see the timelines around the projects that I'm launching sort of slipping and sliding and having to be flexible until I get to a place where those are things that are actually, you know, funded and earning income. So that's kind of the push and pull. And I think, you know, I'd love to hear what you have to say about it. I definitely have some thoughts about it in terms of patterns and ways that I use time mismanagement as sort of a way to not be good to myself. It's almost a form of abuse that you could kind of match to, you know, binge drinking or overeating or other types of things that you just know aren't healthy, but you do. And I think I do some of that using time. But I think there might be other things at work as well. So, you know.
Okay. Well, first of all, that you did a great job of, you know, articulating it. And I think what I took from it at the essence is something that a lot of people can relate to, which is the difference between what you got to do to get by at this point and what you want to do.
Yeah.
And to make the transition. So it doesn't matter, you know, what the occupations are. I mean, if it's a doctor who really wants to be a poet, you know, or a school teacher who really wants to be a surfer, or a surfer who really wants to be a school teacher, you know, we find this place in our life where we're called in a different direction. And in our previous direction, we know how to make that work from a survival and money point of view. And the new direction gives us lots of joy and creative juice and lots of opening, but it isn't paying the bills. And so the struggle is about how to balance all of that.
Yep.
Right. Good. So that's just so great because it's a powerful challenge, and it's something so many people can relate to. Well, along the lines of, you know, how I started our talk today, recognizing your own significant passion for self-growth and understanding, I'd like to start just by hearing you say a little bit about what you've already alluded to. It sounded like you were recognizing that you can use time or time management, or you can approach, you know, projects of different kinds in a compulsive way. So you talked about it in comparison to binge drinking, and so that's, I heard that, you know, drinking or any other kind of an addiction, or the word I like to use is compulsion, because it's not so much of a disease and it's something that we all experience. And compulsion definitely is a huge part of this work, is recognizing when it's around and how to, you know, be with it skillfully. So tell me what you already know or observe about the patterns that are in play for you.
Well, okay, so in general terms about time, I definitely have a long history of procrastination, just straight up procrastination, that is does not have any negative reinforcement associated with it. So when I look at, like, why would I continue to wait and have 2 hours to do something when I could have sort of really, you know, spent, you know, or 2 hours before something needs to be done, as opposed to doing it, you know, a few days earlier when it's first there in my calendar. You know, I'm calendaring things, I'm keeping track of things, I'm not always doing them. And I think some of that goes back to, I actually wrote for my community newspaper in high school, and the patterns began then, where I wrote under pressure at the last minute as a journalist in high school and then in college, and didn't seem to have any problems with it. I wrote papers at the last minute and got good grades on them. And, you know, so I never really had the reinforcement. The only thing that I see is sort of a negative, which is always been there, but it's always been, you know, sort of a way that I didn't treat myself well, is that there is angst, you know. So there's spiritual and emotional upheaval and unrest, which is kind of drama that's not necessary, that I create by doing that to myself from a time perspective. So I know that that's true, and yet I keep doing it. And it doesn't feel as comfortable or luxurious or even, like, polite as I would be if I was managing the time differently. And it's definitely not something I would do to a stranger. I wouldn't walk into someone's office and be like, okay, we got to do this right away, you know, or I'm not going to let you start this until right before you have to, you know, it's not something that makes sense to, in the context of workflow, but I do it, you know, to myself.
Right. You know what's really great in that recognition is that almost everything that we do to ourselves in the present that is less than wholesome and caring is somehow a habit that we developed at an earlier time that served us then but now has just outrun its usefulness.
And so,
and so you described how you developed a habit back when you were a young journalist that worked for you. First of all, because I'm imagining that, you know, at the age of, 17, 18, or 20, that there was probably a little bit more pleasure in the adrenaline rush of upheaval than there is now.
Mm.
Plus also the satisfaction of acing it, you know, I can do this.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I, you know, you're a person of, you know, great competence, and it always feels good to flex those muscles. But also you probably, you know, gave yourself an opportunity to have a lot of play that maybe, you know, you thought wouldn't come to you if you, you know, rolled up your sleeves earlier. Did I get those right, or are there any others that you can think of that would have led to making that choice back then?
I think those are both true, and it's especially pertinent, the adrenaline piece, because I'm now sort of at a point in my life where I really need to be kicking adrenaline for physical reasons to actually, you know, be healthy. It's really important for me to not be an adrenaline junkie anymore. So that's, it's interesting now to see it in the context of that. I also feel like there's some, it's ironic because it's not as alive and active in me as maybe it is in other people who would claim it for themselves, but I think there's a little bit of a saboteur in there somewhere, an element of undermining a perfection that is possible out of maybe just awe. Still there?
Yeah, I think we lost our section. You said, I think where I couldn't hear you is when you said undermining a sense of perfection, and then
and the fear of like what would happen if I really was as rad as I know I could be, kind of thing.
Okay, so in the past, it sounds like, you know, the secondary gain or gains were, you know, you got to ride the roller coaster of life and, you know, kick butt. You also got to play. Now what we're saying is that, you know, the gain around the adrenaline roller coaster is actually a loss, because for where you are in your life health-wise, you don't want to, you know, be living that. It has too big of a cost. Also, we didn't mention this before, but I wonder if it's true for you as it is for most people that as an adult, when you leave something to the last minute and you play instead, the play is never completely free because there's always that nagging awareness in the back of your mind of what you're putting off. Do you ever have that experience?
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. And then I'm not completely free and completely present to either experience, ironically.
Right. You'd have to be like the world's greatest compartmentalizer not to be affected by that thing that's hanging over your head. You know?
Yeah.
So we all suffer from that, too, when we play that game. But you maybe hit on something that is, you know, well, let me pause and say, I get that you know that those habits are in place, but the gains from the past are no longer, are no longer experienced as gains in the present. So you have a lot of motivation to change those habits and not a lot of motivation to keep them in place. Is that accurate?
Yeah, definitely. And it's almost, it's at that point now where I have a self-awareness. I see it happening. I can sometimes even become self-aware and step out, get sort of lucid, if you will, about it at the beginning of the activity or the behavior. And it's, it's almost like the part I need now is to just mindfully, really lovingly, you know, like replace with something. And like, I don't feel like I need to be talked into it by myself, but I still find myself doing it. And it really is almost like some kind of being on autopilot. And there's some, you know, there's, I'm fairly certain that I have attention deficit disorder, and I've always just managed it in the career that I've chosen. Is, you know, people think I'm an exquisite multitasker. Well, you know, I am, but that's because I think I'm found a professional niche where doing that is a good thing, you know. So it's like I just, there's some discipline that's involved, you know, to go all the way with this transformation that I'm seeking. And some of it, I think, has to do with loving myself and forgiving myself, or letting some of this go. And then some of it is, you know, just managing what I know is true about my health, about my body energy, my biorhythms, all those kinds of things. You know, so some of it is logistical and terrestrial, and some of it is a clearing on a psycho-spiritual level that I know needs to occur.
Right. Okay, well, for me, hearing all of this, it seems like the very best thing that we can do is kind of go right into the belly of the beast, so to speak. And I know you're a very imaginative person, so you can use this particular process that I want to do with you to enter into where those habits can be shifted and where the biggest challenges are. I don't want to lose track of the fact that you mentioned also that there may be a fear of, you know, your greatness, or a fear of ultimate success that might come from that. So I think what we're going to do would most likely address that too, if it was really relevant. So here's what I propose, that you think about either an incident that has some charge to it, or an experience like this that is fresh, or that is has a lot of charge, or just kind of the gestalt of the whole deal, you know, in other words, like this whole cycle that you've lived out for many years. You can kind of use either one. But what I want you to do is bring yourself to that place in your mind's eye when you know you would be served by just, you know, stopping the play or the diversionary activity and just bringing your attention to the task at hand, getting it done, then go into those other activities. But you don't do it, right? That something comes up. There's like a inside, a flinch of some sort, and I don't wanna, that keeps you from moving forward. So as I describe that, can you kind of get a felt sense of that moment as it arises for you?
Yeah, it's especially easy now because I'm staring at a whiteboard that has, you know, the sort of more mundane things I'm doing that are part of my kind of old career on one side, and my not yet done, you know, roadmap to the things I want to be doing on the other side. So it's very visceral.
Okay, gotcha. Now, so if you kind of sink into that moment, the decisive moment where you either divert off into an unessential activity, or the one that you sense that it would be the best for you to, you know, take care of right now, and you imagine yourself, you know, moving towards that activity that you really would like to do, but habitually don't do. First of all, what do you notice? Do you notice anything in your body, that a feeling, a sensation, anything at all that's connected with that? Not going to do it.
It actually feels like an inside push and pull, as if someone had a hold of one part of my organs inside and someone had a part of the, you know, pulling them in an opposite direction. I literally feel like my stomach, my core gets pulled in multiple directions.
Okay, that is a really, you know, great detailed description, and it sounds not very pleasant, and it sounds like not something that you would want to continue experiencing for a long time, you know. And I remember years ago when I first heard the psychological term cognitive dissonance, it really made sense to me for those times where I felt like I was really on the fence. Should I do this or that? Should I go to this place or that place? And you know, what psychologists recognized about cognitive dissonance is that if you're on the fence, you can't really live that way. So eventually you just jump off on one side or another, for better or for worse. And similarly, when we have, you know, visceral or somatic dissonance, as you're describing, it's not a place that we're going to be very comfortable staying. So it sounds like you get out of that experience. You know a way to get out of that experience, which is to put off the activity that you're not used to doing and go to the ones that are either, you know, more mundane or make more money or even in some cases are more fun. That's how you get out of the dissonance that you're experiencing. Is that accurate?
Yeah. It sounds as good as any other reason to explain what I why I'm doing.
Okay. So then let's be more precise and say, turn your attention towards the activity that you believe really would be in your highest good right now. I'm guessing that might be something on the other side of the whiteboard. It's about this new life, this new passion, and also building the income connected to it. Would I be right about that?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
Okay, so imagine yourself saying, I'm going to get out of this. Well, first of all, I should pause, because with that dissonance that you described so well, the first and best thing that you could do is give yourself a few moments of spacious attention directly placed at the center of that feeling. So if you're able to still be in touch with it or even to summon it up, that usual push-pull, see if you can just be with it and allow it to just express and move in whatever way it does, not trying to figure it out or gain insight or even make it go away, but just create a real welcome space for it to be without any resistance from you. Can you do that for a few silent moments?
Okay.
Yeah, and that's perfect. Breathe into it just as you did. That's going to create a lot of space. And I'm going to talk quietly. I want you to do it while I'm talking, and then I'll quiet down. But just as a reminder that you're letting yourself have the experience that is so challenging. And this time, rather than thinking of it as a problem or trying to get rid of it or even understand it, you're just saying, what is here? What is this push-pull inside me? What does it feel like? And what do I notice as I pay very close and gentle attention to it? Just keep going for a few moments. What do you notice?
What's that?
What do you notice?
On a visceral level, I feel like a feeling in my chest that is, you know how it's like barely distinguishable sometimes between an anxiety that's like a fluttering of like a new love versus something that seems scary, you know? So it's sort of, I feel like a little bit of like a whoo feeling.
That was great, and I'm just creating a space. Is there anything more you want to add to that, or is that the primary?
No, not right now. Okay. That was sort of the gut response, yeah.
Okay, so you just with a few moments of attention, you hit on something that I think is really crucial, and that is that the new has a quality of excitement to it that is connected to fear. And sometimes they, as you said, in using your own words, are kind of flip sides of the same coin. So it's natural that as you would be moving into this new arena, that there would be both, right? The fear of the unknown, but also the excitement of what's to come. So something about being able to stay connected to that experience and let it kind of cycle in its own way, you know, surf it really with your attention, could be really helpful in just creating some inner peace about it and not have to react to it, you know, in any way, let alone a habitual one. So I would invite you just for another few seconds to go back in to that place that comes when you're right at this decision point about the old way or the new way, an old task or a new task. And I'm just going to give you a few more moments just to hang out there and surf that sensation and see how it shifts or changes just as a result of you placing some caring attention upon it. Keep going for a few more seconds.
Yeah, there was a little mental dance that had to occur about deserving that.
Mm-hmm. So just describe the mental dance for a moment.
Like a brief feeling of like, oh, well, that's just indulgent, or it's scandalous, or you don't get that because I don't know. Like, I mean, that was the thing. Ultimately, if I started to question it, there's no legitimate reason why not. So it's not, they won't last. But the initial instinct is like, you know, next trap, you know,
right.
Throw out the net, throw out the hole. You're not allowed to have that. You know, and see if she fought for that one kind of thing. So there's like, feel like it's a little bit of an obstacle course for some reason to get to acceptance and action.
Right. And so you, you know, again, just with a few minutes of gentle attention that wasn't about analysis, that wasn't about changing anything, you know, you witnessed how that question about, you know, deserving it, like you even said before, you know, something around, you know, can I give it to myself? Am I allowed to have it? You witnessed how it comes up right in that critical juncture. And so when we want to follow the path of acceptance as opposed to bringing some kind of resistance to it or, you know, fighting with one part of ourselves against another, then we say, okay, that's excellent, because what you have identified is that there is a part of you, no matter how big or small, that doesn't believe that you're deserving of what would come to you if you really spread your wings and flew in this new direction.
Mm-hmm.
So then what we're able to do is actually say, well, let's give that part of you some space to really fully be present, be heard, without any kind of judgment or friction. So can you, even just using the same, you know, powers of physical awareness, if I ask you this question, where do you notice that this part of you might live literally in your body, the I don't deserve everything I really dream about, the undeserving part of you, where do you notice either a feeling or a contraction or tension that arises as you hear me voice that?
It feels almost like a cloudy film in the front of my head, like a little bit of a sort of a cloudy, headachey kind of a thing.
Okay. So see if you can leave your attention there for a few moments. You know, I don't deserve everything I want. And just hang out with that sense of being undeserving, just as you did earlier with the push-pull. And don't try to figure it out, but just, you know, really give it a renewed attention and space, you know, that it doesn't usually have. Just see what happens. Breathe right into that film.
It strikes me as having a much more sort of pervasive, quicker spreading quality to it than the push and pull in my stomach. And I feel like it takes on sort of a tangible space that I've got to move around, that the that the me that honors myself and loves myself and knows that I can, and that that's a great way to be in service, and that, that it's, that I am worthy or whatever, that part of me feels like there's like some crap to negotiate around. It's like it takes up space, and I actually have to physically sort of plot a path around it to my inside of my head, you know?
Okay, so I have some things I want to share with you about that. I think it's really great that you can see that really clearly. But before I do, I want to ask you to go back in one more time and add one element to it, which, you know, when it comes to a part of ourselves that we don't usually address so directly, we can sometimes ask a simple question. If it could speak, what would it say? So in this situation, how we would apply that is, if you go back into that part of you that you have to dance around, the part that feels undeserving, even if, you know, for no reason, it has a reason, whether it's clear about it or not. So go back in and just let your attention be spacious as before, but also add the question, you know, what is undeserving about me? And don't search or strain for the answer, but just see if anything comes up. Stay with it if nothing's quite coming, and it's okay if nothing ever comes, but just keep attentive. So what, if anything, are you noticing?
Definitely felt a little bit of constriction, even in leaving space for it, to like, you know, the initial feeling and physical feeling was like pressure and trouble to get a breath, you know. But it's almost like that somehow it's, it feels really old. It feels kind of like something old that's like, it's not supposed to be fun, or like just, yeah, just somehow that it's not, we're not supposed to get what we want, or it's not supposed to be fun. And when I say it out loud to you, of course, and you know me well enough to know that, like, I can't imagine that there, that that's in there getting enough space, it's so much space and airtime, because it doesn't feel like the way I come in the world, you know, you know, I feel like maybe almost a hedonist, like a lot of my experience and a lot of my time and my work and my play does come from a place of fun. But yeah, it's like, there's like something that just feels very stale and almost not mine, honestly, or maybe I just don't want to take responsibility for it, but it doesn't feel like it initiated in me, but it's just something in there, like it's supposed to be, you know, hard. It's supposed to hurt. It's supposed to be painful.
Right. So I think this is really all right on point, and I'm really glad we're coming to this. The first thing I want to say is that for people who self-actualize, there's an interesting kind of puzzle, because we often have the assumption that as we live more fully into who we're meant to be and express all of ourselves, you know, in a beautiful way, that these parts of ourselves that are not harmonious with that would just, you know, diminish or fall away completely. But actually, they come to the surface more fully. They don't belie our success or our actualization. They're just easier to see. And sometimes, you know, we'll call for our attention more fully because it almost seems like they're going to be left behind. You know, I often talk about how Dustin Hoffman, you know, arguably one of the, you know, greatest actors of his generation, when he's doing a Broadway show, you know, before every performance he has diarrhea. And, you know, why does that have to happen? I mean, doesn't he know after all these years how capable he is? But, you know, the terror of moving into his deepest presence to be able to use his, you know, great skill fully in the moment is just part of the passage, you know. And so if he, you know, pushes against that, it's going to shut him down. But if he just gives himself, you know, 20 minutes of bathroom time, you know, then he's good to go. So, you know, I didn't even realize as I was just telling you that story, but it's especially relevant for you because you called that stuff that you have to dance around crap, you know. Right.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I'm mindful of the fact that, you know, we need to end our talk within a few minutes. So I want to, rather than get to the rest of it, I want to point to the rest of it, you know, for you and anybody else who might want to, you know, get the most out of this situation. The prescription is really super clear, and that is to hang out, you know, in the way that you were doing, but just more and more fully with that part of you that feels undeserving or feels like you shouldn't get to fly so high or it shouldn't be so fun. The challenge for you is that you are so identified with the opposite. And your identification with living your life fully and being of the greatest service makes you feel a little bit self-conscious, uncomfortable, and even ridiculous to have this part of you, you know, present. Even to the part where you think, you know, it isn't necessarily, you know, yours, to use your language. But, of course, it is yours because if it wasn't, you could just take a big, deep breath, let yourself open up fully, and it would release. But here it is, actively playing a part in your everyday decision making.
Right.
So we don't even have to discuss what yours and not yours really means in the ultimate spiritual sense in which everything is just energy that's, you know, moving. We know that it's at least decided to check into your hotel long enough to create a pattern that you would like to bring some attention and shift to.
Yeah.
So you know, to wrap it all up, the more you are willing, without judgment or a time clock or even analysis, the more you are willing just to hang out in the don't deserve it place, the more you will unravel the pattern and be able to, rather than get stuck when you're facing a decision point about your activity, stay present and respond not out of resistance to any direction, but respond to, you know, a natural expansive flow that's coming from what really is best to put your attention on in that moment. What do you make of that?
Yeah, well, I think that I felt like a sort of a little bit of a pressure release in the idea that there's nowhere to get to, in the sense that it's not all just going to like magically go away, you know, that even Dustin Hoffman or other people, you know, whoever they are, still carry that as well. So I think that's really helpful. And I think you're spot on because I haven't. You know, I've seen it. It's like, you know, like finding some weird blemish and some, you know, hard to reach spot on your body and being like, ew, but not actually, you know, getting after it in some way. And so I think that just the idea of just sitting with it is a good idea. Instead of, I think I've been kind of going, ew, and maybe turning away as opposed to being like, oh, look at that thing. You know, let's touch that. Let's look at that. But yet also not feeling like, oh, I need to poke it. I need to prod it. I need to lance it, you know, but instead just be like, oh, I just need to like acknowledge that that's happening right now and then watch what occurs, you know. I think that's it's a good thing for me to just be with it and not be overly active and not be avoiding.
The more you say ew, the more, you know, powerful it's going to push back, you know, and the more you allow it to be as it is, the more it's going to just take its place within the overall pantheon of your, you know, varying life energies and not be such a drain. You know, it's a drain right now because you won't let it in. So it just keeps pounding and pounding and pounding. And as you start to let it in, you know, as I say, it will really chill a lot and make things easier for you. And it is interesting and ironic that, you know, when you move away from those places inside of you and become more and more who you're meant to be, if you don't bring them along, they will sabotage you, to use your word from earlier in our conversation. And, you know, I'm glad you, you know, took some solace in recognizing that, you know, the people at the top, whatever the top means and whatever endeavors they're involved in, don't become something any less vulnerable, any less human, or any less, you know, in shadow. And one of the things that comes up a lot in these kinds of conversations is the old Chinese proverb, the bigger the front, the bigger the back.
Yeah.
And so the way to handle that is to make sure that there isn't a back or a front, but it becomes a circle. And so rather than proclaiming your freedom and living mostly like that and then vanquishing, you know, and villainizing the part of you that can't quite play the game yet, if you bring it in and you honor it and you just give it space and really caring attention, that's the only thing you need to do. It's not more
right.
complicated than that.
Well, and what's exciting about that is that a lot of what I'm talking about doing is really scaling up. And what's great is that even though this thing might stay with me, no matter how I scale up in terms of the impact or the size or the magnitude of the projects I'm involved in, even though that thing is still lurking, it's the same old thing, regardless of how big I'm showing up in the world. So it's not necessarily, I don't necessarily have the sense that it becomes foreign or even more powerful or, you know, and more somehow different to deal with. You know, it's sort of like it's the same demon, it's the same critter, whether I'm doing little things in the world or whether I'm doing huge things in the world. And that's, and that makes it somehow, I can get my head around it.
Thing. Right. I know. Well, I want to just leave you with one thought that's connected to all of this, because we started out by talking about, you know, time management and, you know, just shifting from one career path to another, one lifestyle to another. It's my experience and belief that when you open fully to all these different aspects of yourself, and then from a place of openness, you look at what needs to be done right now in this very moment, often what needs to be done is clear, and you start to sense that you're not even on an ultimate spiritual sense the doer, that the activity that is called for begins to happen, you know, and the source of the energy doesn't even seem to be your will, and therefore it's much more graceful and easy, and there's much less stress and effort in the activity that originally seemed like it was going to be so challenging. So what you have to look forward to is not just, you know, making a circle out of the front and the back, but also having some of the things that have traditionally been, you know, hard actually start to seem like they just take care of themselves.
Yeah, and I know that's true from other aspects of my life where I go into things and through the other side of the uncomfortable, and then there's momentum, and so yeah, I can imagine that will be the case.
Good. Well, I'm mindful of the time and your time in particular. So, is there anything you want to add before we actually, you know, turn off the recording for the session?
No, just that, you know, I appreciate you taking the time to do this, and I hope that it's, you know, helpful to others, you know, to kind of, it's definitely useful to me to just have someone give their attention and intention to me in this kind of experience. And so, you know, I just want to thank you for doing it, and that I'll check back in with you once I, you know, sit in that spot. I'm going to I'm going to, you know, set up a lawn chair in there and see what's going on. And I'm sure there might be more to share after that.
Great. Well, as always, I look forward to that. And this really is a win-win-win, you know, for you, as you're describing, for me, because it's a privilege to be with you and your bright light, and then also for people who are listening. So thanks so much. And, I look forward to the next chapter.
Right on.
You've been listening to Emotional Connection with Raphael Kushner. Our theme music is by Stephen Walters. For more information on this work, please visit my website, livingthequestions.org. This is also where you can reach me to ask questions and provide feedback, schedule your own private session by phone, get listings of upcoming events in your area, and learn about our unique year-long program. Once again, that's livingthequestions.org. Thank you for joining us, and here's to emotional connections.